Chris Hedges, a wise owl if ever I saw one, political commentator, journalist, writer, and host of the inimitable Chris Hedges Report, joins me now from the United States. Chris, this is, it feels to me, a momentous evening. The scale and nature of the Israeli terrorist attack on Lebanon is likely to be a spark that brings the much-discussed wider war in the Middle East, at least according to me. What about you?
Yes, and it follows a pattern. So if you know the history of Gaza as well as I do, but there would be an uneasy ceasefire, and Israel would carry out, would break the ceasefire and carry out provocations that they knew would elicit a response by Hamas and other resistance groups. And we're seeing the same pattern here. Remember that these explosions came a day after the Israeli cabinet released a decision that a priority now was to return Israelis to the north. About 80,000 have been displaced. There have been reports in the Israeli press that there are disputes between the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, over a war in Lebanon. And then there have been rumors that Netanyahu will even dismiss Gallant and replace him with a far-right politician, Gideon Sarar. On Monday, the commander of the Israeli Northern Front recommended that the government conduct an offensive to create a buffer zone within the Lebanese southern Lebanon. And this takes place, of course, a month after Hezbollah launched a drone or rocket attack that targeted Israel's military intelligence headquarters near Tel Aviv. That attack was in retaliation for Israel's assassination of the top Hezbollah commander, Fahud Shakar, and this was in late July in Beirut. Assassination took place the next day. There was an assassination of Hamas's Politburo chief, Ismail Haniyeh. So we've now watched for several weeks these provocations by Israel. Israel knows very well that those provocations demand a response, but I think you're right. What we're seeing now is at a whole other level, talking about thousands of people. And remember, many of these people are not Hezbollah fighters. They may work for Hezbollah, but they work often in civilian infrastructure. These things were going off, exploding in supermarkets while people were driving cars. It killed children. Then, of course, today now we've had apparently walkie-talkies. So, yes, Israel provokes on purpose. This is a massive provocation. All signs are that there will be an incursion by Israeli forces into southern Lebanon, perhaps even once again a bombing of Beirut. You know, this fits the pattern, both in terms of Israel's long animosity towards Hezbollah and Lebanon, but also its animosity towards the Palestinians in Gaza. But the consequences of this could be catastrophic. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm terrified for what comes next.
An Israeli incursion, as you put it, invasion, I said, will be, of course, hotly contested. The Lebanese resistance is very strong and numerous, and with a quite awesome firepower, according to Israeli sources themselves, quite apart from the fact they have powerful friends around the region. It is possible that an Israeli invasion of Lebanon could be their bloodiest ever, costliest ever incursion, invasion into an Arab country.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, both Iran and Hezbollah have actually acted up until now with amazing restraint. But yes, and it's interesting that the Israeli press reports are saying that Israeli Ministry of Transportation officials are preparing for a potential attack on the port of Haifa and Ben Gurion Airport. That, of course, is something that we have not seen, something that that would really begin to shut down the ability of Israel to operate. But I think the fact that Israeli officials are expecting something of that magnitude buttresses your point that this will be conducted at a level that we haven't yet seen. No, I don't think that Israel's success with an incursion is in any way assured. Hezbollah is not Hamas. Hamas's rockets, I mean, to be fair, are largely ineffectual, very small compared to the missile systems provided by Iran, of course, that Hezbollah possesses. So yes, if Hezbollah decides to go all out, then I think that the possibility of this ending very badly for Israel is likely.
Now, my government has been active on social media today. Ironically, on one of them I just saw, the Foreign Office said that they stood four square with the United States against cybercrime and hacking of electronic equipment. But they've been busy on other things, large and small. But none of the British government ministers have found a single word of condemnation of what by any measure is a terrorist attack, pregnant with the possibility that others will now copy it, others with whom they're less chummy will now copy it. Is it the same in the US?
Yes, the irony is that you have that US mediator, Hochstein, who's in Israel right now, I think, attempting, well, according to the State Department, to diffuse tensions between Israel and Hezbollah. Well, you're not going to diffuse tensions between Israel and Hezbollah when over the last 2 days you've had thousands of people wounded, many quite seriously, many civilians. This is also fits this kind of pattern of Israel essentially running rogue, doing anything it wants, and the U.S., because of the Zionist lobby, which owns Congress, essentially being unable to curb the most rapacious and aggressive behavior by Israel, which, and of course, Israel expects that should it get into trouble with Iran, the United States will militarily intervene on its side. And they may not be wrong. I mean, Netanyahu has long tried to drag the United States into a conflict with Iran, just like the Israeli government dragged the United States into the Iraq war. That was a Zionist neoliberal or neoconservative project, which didn't end well for the United States, but managed to essentially break the one regional power that posed a serious threat to Israel, and that was the Iraqi regime under Saddam Hussein. So it served Israel's interests. It did not serve the interests of the United States, certainly not the interests within the region. There's the consequences of this regionally for the United States, and maybe ultimately for Israel, are deeply distressing.
Now, it turns out to have been quite a simple affair. The only barrier, really, is whether you would do such a thing, not whether you could do such a thing. Motorola say they're completely innocent. They sold a license to what turned out to be a shell company in Hungary using a Middle East bank, intriguingly. And that company then produced Motorola goods, except they were filled with explosive. Anybody could do that, Chris, couldn't they? And now, almost certainly, they will.
Yeah, of course, it becomes another template. I think, you know, there's no question this is an act of terrorism, state terrorism on the part of Israel. But yes, of course, once you begin to employ these acts of terror, you get copycat terror. I mean, remember, this is a few years ago, but the I think it was ISIS captured a Jordanian pilot. And what did they do? They put the pilot in a cage and burned him alive, because that's what, of course, Jordanian and American and NATO planes were doing to them. So yes, I mean, go all the way back to 9/11. The hijackers of 9/11 speak the language that we taught them, which was massive explosions and death above a city skyline. We've been doing it since Vietnam, when Robert McNamara called the massive bombing campaign, the Christmas bombing campaign of North Vietnam, a way to quote unquote send a message to Hanoi. So I think you make an extremely important point that the atrocities we carry out are then often visited upon us. And yeah, I think that you're right. This is down the road, this will be something that will be visited on Israel and perhaps its allies.
They may have done it before, of course. I've been deeply skeptical about the helicopter crash that murdered the president of Iran and the foreign minister of Iran. I'm wondering if they had a pager or a Motorola radio in the helicopter.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Remember that, you know, going back to the so-called bomb maker in Gaza, they were doing this with cell phones, which is why resistance groups switched away from the cell phones, not only because they were tracking devices and you could be monitored, but because we had already seen Israel use mobile devices or turn mobile devices into explosives.
What do you think the implications are for the electronics industry of all this? I posited in my introductory remarks that if you lived in the global south, if you lived in a country that the United States and the United Kingdom had bad relations with or even designated as an enemy, you'd have to be a fool to be carrying around Western technology in your pocket or in your car. Am I right?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And especially because there will be no accountability. You can be sure of that. So, yeah, I think it's just one more step, which we have seen in this kind of multipolar universe, and we can begin with all of the sanctions against Russia, you have seen a stepping away from that Western hegemony, not only within the banking system, but within the technology sector. So, yeah, I think this is one more step in the fragmentation of the world. I mean, why? That's a, you raise a completely legitimate point. Why could you ever trust these companies again? Especially as I cannot stress enough, the fact that nobody will be held, Israel, which probably clearly did it, is not going to be held accountable. Nobody's going to be held accountable.
Turning, if I may, finally, Chris, to the Ukraine. We're asking the question in our poll tonight, is Zelensky finished? Do you think he is?
I don't know. It's, you know, the Ukrainian oligarchic system is pretty corrupt, and it's greased by money, of which apparently Zelensky has quite a bit. So I don't know. Well, I'm going to have to be an agnostic on that question.
Thank you very much, as always, Chris Hedges, political commentator supreme, the man who in a sane world would be occupying Foggy Bottom as Secretary of State.